Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Way of Willingness, is written by Irv Kunick and is dedicated to the 125th anniversary of Congregation B'nai Jeshurun. I will ask you first to consider two little dust specks of geography. The first goes by the name of Katamon. On this spot, amid rolling hills that sit like fat shadows just west and south of Jerusalem, a Hebrew poet found himself brother to the storm, to rock, and to forest.
I am unto God like hyacinth and mallow, having nothing in the world but this bright sun.
On this spot, most any day, 200 yearlings of Israel will troop out into the fields to prune fruit trees and gingerly tend beehives. Some will lay bricks, others will study the strange anatomy of a farm tractor. Still others will candle eggs. This place is called the Israel Goldstein Youth Village. This second grain of real estate is known as Mid-Manhattan. To be specific, West 88th Street between Broadway and West End Avenue. It bubbles along in a constant skew of nimbleness. Apartment buildings tend each to its neighbor like corn kernels on a cob. Here's a building of rich buff color in marvelous counterpoint to its setting. A high-arched portal is set with a rose window that sucks in the sunlight, slits it into deep blues and golden yellows. This is the synagogue of the congregation B'nai Jeshurun. Now, between these two places, there is a path. The story we tell today is of this path, of its windings and turnings, its mileposts, its long reach from dream to reality. And we call it the Way of Willingness. The beginning is marked by the date October of the year 1825. The place, the office of Harmon Hendricks, Parnas of the Congregation Sheret Israel, the oldest, the only Jewish synagogue in New York City.
Gentlemen, it is a difficult thing you ask me to decide, Mr. Hart. A second synagogue in New York City, indeed.
It is badly needed.
Is it? Gentlemen, by its nature, it splits the Hebrew community in two, as if by a knife. Here, this synagogue is the pivotal point of all our affairs. Religious, social, philanthropic. Against the disintegrating forces that are tearing away at the fabric of Judaism around the world, this is the one guard. The one remaining symbol of our dream of ultimate unity. Like leaves on a tree, we are fixed to a strong, solid trunk. But now you would tear the leaves off. Let them blow away.
We are planting another tree.
I'm not sure. All these years, I have tried to guide the way. I have been vigilant. I have been rigid. It is the only way to be.
Mr. Hendricks, since the year 1654, when the first of our persuasion, Jacob Bar Samson of blessed memory, came to New York City, the Jewish population of the city has risen to almost 1,000 souls. Each day, the figure rises.
This morning a ship came in from Antwerp with 26 more families.
Yes, 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 I know these things.
Then you know also that many of the congregation now live far removed from the synagogue. It is terribly difficult for them to get here, particularly on the Sabbath when they must walk.
Yes, I am also aware of that, of course.
There is also the fact that many of us who came originally from Middle Europe find it somewhat difficult to adjust ourselves to the so-called Portuguese type of ritual that is customarily used here at Sheriff Israel. We would be more comfortable with the type of worship we knew and loved in the old country.
But if you break away, where shall you go?
Temporarily, we shall meet in Washington Hall on Pearl Street. But we have other plans.
We know that a plot of land on Elm Street is offered for sale. It is now the site of the First Colored Presbyterian Church. This, with God's help, we intend to make the permanent site of our synagogue.
The name, you have chosen it.
B'nai Jeshurun.
Everything seems settled, then. Why do you come to me?
We come to you because we are brethren in this congregation. What we do in no way will loosen the bonds that bind us. We want your help and your blessing.
As Parnas of Sheriff Israel, I find it beyond the means of my position to agree to all this. But as an individual, I say, go and do this thing, and may the light of the Lord shine upon me.
Years ago, the congregation B'nai Jeshurun was duly founded. It came into being to serve the spiritual craving of an old people in a new land. It was the hub of community existence. Here marriages were performed. Here children caressed the holy books, one eye on the page, the other on the clock. Here people came to pray, to talk, to sing, and on gray occasions they came to weep. From here sons went off into manhood, daughters went off into marriage. Here the indigent came to receive, and the wealthy came to give. Here was the kernel and the shell of the Jewish community. And what of the other land, the other end of the bridge? What was there, south and west of Jerusalem? A few lambs wandered, a shepherd slept, and the passion of the land for seed was unrequited. Nothing here but stones and sand. It is 1840 now, and the scene is the home of Israel Bear Cushy, venerable member of the congregation B'nai Jeshurun. The Sabbath meal is over. The table is cleared. The grace that follows all meals is concluded. Normally, this is a time of religious reflection, but this night it is different.
I have had a letter from Richmond, from the Parnas of the synagogue there. It concerns the terrible persecution of our Jewish brethren in Damascus.
So, what does he say?
He asks the Jews of New York to join with all the other Jewish congregations in America in a nationwide protest meeting.
But how will our meeting in the United States save the lives of the poor innocents now being beaten and starved in Damascus?
It is his suggestion that we petition the State Department to intervene in behalf of the Jews of Damascus.
So, what do you think of the idea, Israel?
What do you think, Joseph?
I'm afraid of it.
Why?
It seems presumptuous on our part. Have we the right to ask our government to involve itself in a foreign matter that has no direct bearing on American interests?
I think we have every right to ask our government to use its influence to fight for justice anywhere on earth.
But Damascus is so far away.
Only as far as the bigot. And he may live next door.
You think we should have this protest meeting, then?
I think we must have it. That's the particular reason I have asked all you gentlemen here this evening. You are the board of trustees of the synagogue. I ask you to permit the use of B'nai Jeshurun for this meeting.
The shul? The synagogue?
Why not?
Is it the thing to do, Israel? To use the synagogue for political purposes?
Political purposes? Joseph, how can you call a protest against persecution political? It is no more political than freedom and human dignity and social justice are political. What is the synagogue but the roof and the walls that house the Torah, the scroll of laws, the basic documents of all social relationships? It is not a question of whether we should use the synagogue for a protest meeting. We can hold it nowhere else. Will you gentlemen agree?
Everybody's for it.
Good. Good. This has meaning. For the first time, the Jews of America will unite in common cause for common objectives. Believe me, gentlemen, it will not be the last.
On a burning hot day of August, the doors of B'nai Jeshurun were thrown open and the crowds came, Jews and non-Jews alike. They came in anger and indignation. They came in solemn protest. This was a voice that must be heard. August 26, 1840, and a letter from John Forsyth, Secretary of State, to Israel Korsheet of the congregation B'nai Jeshurun. And this letter, a sparkling gem in the treasure hall of American history, in our proud record of fighting for the attainment of justice and humanity, makes one tremendous statement. It points out that the intercession of the United States with a Mohammedan power in behalf of Jews comes most appropriately
from a friendly power whose institutions, political and civil, places upon the same footing the worshippers of God of any form or faith, acknowledging no distinction between the Mohammedan, the Jew, and the Christian.
Meanwhile, the city grows. Avenues, once mere cow paths and wagon ruts, suddenly are streets pulsating with life. There is movement, pressures pushing outward from the center against the elastic rim of the city. The Elm Street Synagogue of B'nai Jeshurun, way uptown in 1825, by 1850, is an anachronism, a place of worship set amid factories, railroad stations, warehouses. It is time to move. But we look again at the spot south and west of Jerusalem. We look and see nothing yet. We see nothing but barrenness and weeds. It waits. In New York, the synagogue moves. In 1850, uptown to Green Street. In 1863, further uptown to 34th Street. In 1884, still northward to Madison Avenue and 65th Street. And then, in 1918, B'nai Jeshurun moves into its present synagogue, the high-portaled temple on West 88th Street. Here the modern story begins, in the office of Saul M. Strook, president of the congregation.
Some decision must be reached, and quickly. Our congregation can't continue without the appointment of a rabbi.
It's difficult. We've been examining applications all month from rabbis as far away as Cardiff, Wales. But we haven't been able to find the right man, the exactly right man.
I am going up to the Jewish Theological Seminary this afternoon. Memorial services are being held for our beloved teacher and brother, Solomon Schechter. Perhaps I will have the opportunity of talking over our problem with some of the teachers there. They may know of someone.
Do it, Sal. It's important. The congregation is falling apart without a rabbi.
What is a rabbi? A rabbi is a teacher, a scholar, a leader. A rabbi is a man who thinks with a thousand minds, who guides without goading, who is forceful but never forcing, who is dogged but never dogmatic, who is lofty but never overbearing. He is a man who can speak with humor at one moment and compassion at the next. He is at one and the same time the head and the heart of a congregation. Seeking such a man, Saul M. Strook attended the memorial services for Solomon Schechter at the Jewish Theological Seminary.
Rabban Gamliel conceived of public office not as a means of glory, but as a public trust. It is told that he once offered a high position to two poor scholars. And when they refused it on the ground that they did not care to assume authority, he said, "I am not giving you a position of authority. I am giving you a position of service." The world of today is just a...
Who's the boy speaking? What's his name?
His name is Israel Goldstein. He will graduate from the seminary this year.
Odd to have so young a man deliver the eulogy on an occasion like this.
It happened this way. He was one of Solomon Schechter's dearest students. The speech he is making now, he delivered as his first sermon in Schechter's class. People here at the seminary felt that no better tribute could be given to Dr. Schechter's memory than to have young Goldstein repeat this sermon.
I see, yes. Now I see.
Between capital and labor. But we can hope for leaders to give strength to Judaism in this country. Leaders who are both Jewish and modern. Leaders who will sacrifice their personal ambitions for the sake of their cause. Leaders who can also be followers. Leaders who will work not for their own honor, but for the honor of God and the welfare of Israel.
Mr. Goldstein.
Yes, sir?
I'm Sal Strook.
Yes, I know you, sir.
May I congratulate you on your address?
Thank you.
It was a very moving speech. A perfect tribute to Dr. Schechter.
I was proud of the opportunity given me to deliver it.
Tell me, what are your plans now?
Well, naturally, I'm looking for a congregation, a small one out of town.
Will you come to B'nai Jeshurun?
To B'nai Jeshurun?
Yes. Come to us as our rabbi.
But Mr. Strook...
Think about it. Don't give me your answer now. Let me know, but soon. Do that for me, please. Let me know soon.
Young Israel Goldstein took his problem to Dr. Cyrus Adler, president of the seminary.
Dr. Adler, how can I even think of going to B'nai Jeshurun without experience? How can I go into one of the largest and most influential congregations in the country?
They want you, Israel.
It's a tremendous honor, but...
Are you afraid to go?
No. No, I don't think I'm afraid. It's not that. It's just that I'm not sure I'm qualified to take such a position at this time.
Israel, in the address you delivered a few days ago, you told how Rabban Gamliel convinced two poor scholars to assume a high position of authority. They were reluctant, but he said to them, well, you know the word.
Yes. I am not giving you a position of authority. I am giving you a position of service.
There is your answer, Israel. Right there.
In 1925, the congregation celebrated its 100th birthday. From all the world came messages of encouragement and felicitation. It was a time of celebration and, for the moment, a time of looking backwards and of memory. But this was merely an interlude, a time of taking stock, catching breath, then quickly moving onward. And the years moved onward. And across a sea and a continent and still another sea, there was that blessed piece of earth called Jerusalem. And men were fighting there now and dying. But B'nai Jeshurun heard the call that came over a sea and a continent and still another sea. They heard the call and answered quickly. They gave unstintingly of time, of money, and of something far deeper, far more precious. They gave of their own existence.
Mr. Schweitzer, no one else but you, the president of this congregation, can help me make this decision. In a sense, it is not even my decision at all. It's yours.
Dr. Goldstein, you know how we feel about you. You know that any honor that comes to you comes to us, too. It is something we are all proud of. Having our rabbi asked to serve as treasurer of the Jewish agency to help Israel in the first year of its statehood.
But you understand what it means.
Yes, I do. It means that you must go to Palestine.
For at least a year. A full year.
We want you to go, Dr. Goldstein. We want you to go. And yet, on the other hand, we must be selfish, too. We must think of ourselves, our congregation.
I understand that.
So far as I can see, there is only one way out of this dilemma.
What do you suggest?
I suggest we do again what we've always done in the past. When in trouble, go to the seminary. They've never failed us yet. You are the best proof of that.
Well, gentlemen, I feel a bit like a Siamese twin at the moment. I don't know just exactly in what capacity to consider your request. Now, shall I do it as the chairman of the board of the Jewish Theological Seminary or as a member of the congregation B'nai Jeshurun?
Make your decision in both capacities, Alan.
All right. Then here's what I say. Go to Palestine, Dr. Goldstein. Go and do the tremendous job that needs doing. So far as the congregation is concerned, the seminary gives its word that it will not be neglected. Not for so much as a day.
December 17th, 1948 was cool and comfortable in Jerusalem. A delightful day to go walking. Except for snipers' bullets. Except for landmines that splintered the deadly quiet with their crushing cough. In his office, Dr. Israel Goldstein reached for another stack of papers, made another decision. Across the world in mid-Manhattan, the snow fell as it hadn't fallen for half a century. Buses on Broadway stalled in their tracks, soon looked like nothing more than igloos. The city came to a frozen halt. The next day, a teacher at the seminary reached for his overcoat and tugged on his rubbers.
Doctor, you're not going out in this weather.
I'm going out, yes.
But you're not going far.
Pretty far. Broadway and 88th Street.
What? You're going to walk 40 blocks?
Mm-hmm.
2 miles in this weather? And on the Sabbath when you won't even take the subway?
So I'll walk.
But why? Why can't you go there tomorrow or the next day? Or whenever this blizzard lets up?
I can't go tomorrow or the next day or any other day. I've been asked to conduct the Sabbath service at B'nai Jeshurun today. I'll be there today.
When the year was up, the critical, the dawning year of Israel, the people of Israel wished to show their gratitude. On a little spot just west and south of Jerusalem, amid rolling hills that sit like fat shadows, they created a youth village, and they gave it the name of the rabbi of congregation B'nai Jeshurun. At the dedication ceremonies, Israel Goldstein looked down at eager faces, heard happy songs, and was proud. Later, he walked among the children. Saw a boy with two other children.
These two are my brother and sister. They have just come in from Yemen.
How long has it been since you've seen them?
4 years. They were babies then, both of them. Now they look sick and skinny and so dirty that maybe they wonder if they never can look clean. But don't you worry. We'll make them over again.
And so the bridge was built between the two dust specks of geography, each across the world from the other. The congregation B'nai Jeshurun of mid-Manhattan has taken the Israel Goldstein Youth Village near Jerusalem to its heart. For they know that the name it bears, the name of their own rabbi, is completely their own name. And the village itself, a growing part of their own community.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Jacob Sinkoff, President of Congregation B'nai Jeshurun and member of the Board of Overseers of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Mr. Sinkoff.
I am sure that all of you have been moved by this dramatization of the highlights of the history of our beloved congregation. What an inspiring story it is. Founded by a handful of men in the days when there were scarcely 1,000 Jews in New York, B'nai Jeshurun has witnessed the growth of our city and our Jewish community and has kept pace with that phenomenal growth. Many aspects of Jewish life have changed in the 125 years of our congregation's existence. In the early days, the synagogue was the center of all Jewish communal activity. You remember the protest meeting in 1840, demanding action against those who persecuted the Jews in Damascus. Congregation B'nai Jeshurun has always maintained an important place in Jewish affairs beyond the boundaries of its spiritual work. The congregation has played a key role in philanthropic work, an aid to the unfortunate at home or abroad, and in the entire sphere of social life. B'nai Jeshurun was a leader in all phases of such effort, but its crowning glory was its high devotion to the rebuilding of the Jewish homeland and to the establishment of Israel. As our Jewish community grew, it was found necessary to develop new methods of dealing with many of these questions. Special organizations were created to handle philanthropy. New groups undertook to help to solve individual and family problems. Little by little, the central role of the congregation in Jewish communal life was restricted and limited more and more to strictly spiritual functions. It is a source of pride to me, therefore, and to all of us who are members of Congregation B'nai Jeshurun, that our congregation, under the new conditions of modern life, and under the inspiring guidance of our beloved senior rabbi, Dr. Israel Goldstein, and our associate rabbi, David H. Panitz, has found it possible to play the old role with which the synagogue has been historically associated. B'nai Jeshurun has consistently given leadership to its members and to the entire community in its work for United Jewish Appeal, for the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, for better relations with other faiths and other races in our city, our state, and our nation. The world today is vastly different than it was in 1825. Yet the basic tasks before the Jewish community remain substantially unchanged. I know that Congregation B'nai Jeshurun will continue its leadership in an ever-widening field of activity.
Thank you, Mr. Sinkoff. Our eternal art drama today, The Way of Willingness, was written by Irv Tunick and was dedicated to the 125th anniversary of Congregation B'nai Jeshurun. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Caton. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Alexander Skirby was the narrator. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.